This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw. It all starts now on Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, I'm David Haw, back here again with Bruce Levine talking baseball 9 to 11 like we do every Saturday morning. Today, telling you why Craig Counsell's already in a bad mood and wondering if the White Sox can stay unbeaten. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Back home again in Indiana.
Not Indiana.
It's back in the studio.
Back home again with Indiana. You can call me Indiana Haw if you want to. Hoosier Haw will do. Vegas Haw, not today. So, yes, I'm back. We are going to talk baseball. I'm looking forward to this. It's been a lot of fun to get the season started. This has been a fascinating week in Chicago sports. Last night, not so much, but... Before that, it was really nice.
Before we get going, my thanks and our thanks from the Score to Ryan McGuffey for the last 7 months of co-hosting with us. Did a terrific job. Terrific guy, terrific reporter, terrific everything. So all the best to Ryan, and thanks again. And
Ryan McGuffey's the best. He's a total pro, and he did a terrific job. And looking forward to continuing our relationship with him. And he is in a good mood because his White Sox are 1-0. Cub fans are in less of a good mood because of what happened last night, which sounded a little like this.
High fly ball, deep left field. This is trouble, and it's going to be a long home run. Eugenio Suarez with a long home run to left. His second home run in the series. And just like that, Arizona takes a 2-1 lead. 3-1 to Suarez, hit to deep left field. It's another home run for Eugenio Suarez. Suarez hit a home run last night. He already has two in the first four innings of this game, and he's got three in the season's first two games.
He has been so hot.
It's a good addition there by Pat.
Pat, great addition and great pronunciation. Eugenio Suarez is not as easy to say as Pat made it sound, but by the third home run, I think he's got it down.
That's his favorite name in baseball.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
And it's the least favorite name for Cub fans because he took Jameson Taillon deep, and Jameson Taillon didn't have it. And the Cubs, 8-1 losers, Bruce, so they are now 1-3. No worries here. No overreaction here. I know you're here to keep me from overreacting, so I'm glad you're here.
No, you're here to just beat me up. I know
no,
that.
I'm not. Nah. Yeah. 1-3, off to a bad start in terms of the starting pitching not being as sharp as you would want it last night. Jameson Taillon, the latest example.
33 home runs against the Cubs lifetime.
Oh, my gosh.
Eugenio Suarez. I'm going to keep working on that myself. I can barely say my own name. So that's a tough one. But again, it shows you as you begin the season, David, we go through this football mentality so much over the first month, don't we? I mean,
yeah,
just over and over again. They're now 1-3, okay, on the season. We're back to the reality of that. And, you know, getting to 500 on this long road trip, you know, they have, you know, four more games.
Till they're home on Friday.
Yeah, right.
Home opener on Friday.
Right, five games, actually.
But so, they have a couple more with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then they go to Sacktown for another opener.
It's going to be a full house.
The Cubs.
It's going to be a.
Well, yeah, but how full is that house?
12,000.
It's a small house, but it's going to be full.
I think they're sold out for the
year.
It's
one of those tiny houses, you know, but it's going to be
12,000 people in Sacramento.
Yeah, everybody's going to be there to see the A's. Don't call them the Oakland A's. They're the A's. Don't call them the Vegas A's. They're only the A's.
They might stay the A's for a long time. I was in Vegas last week, David, and saw where they're planning to put the ballpark on the strip.
Vegas Levine.
Right across from Mandalay Bay.
Uh-huh.
There's not a lot of room there. It's a postage stamp size, you know. Well,
do they really worry about overcrowding at A's games? It's not. You have plenty of room. It's not exactly going to be. It could be a tough ticket. Maybe so. You see what Vegas has done with the Knights hockey.
Yeah.
With the Raiders.
You know, 81 dates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. We digress. The Cubs will go there before coming home. The schedule is the schedule. You can't complain about who you play. Everybody plays the same number of games. So I don't want the Cubs to use either the Japanese trip or the tough schedule early as a crutch. They should be above that and better than that.
You know, there was one guy that was really depressed among the Chicago Cubs yesterday.
Yes, he was. So we'll hear from Craig Counsell in a moment because that's who you're alluding to. He was in a bad mood. Going to set up the show here before we do that. 9:30, we're going to talk to Brian Bannister, the head and director of pitching for the Chicago White Sox. He's got a lot to talk about because on opening day, we saw Sean Burke do his best Garrett Crochet imitation and look very sharp. And he also has some things in the organization going on. We'll talk to him at 9:30. 10 o'clock, we've got Chin Music. I'm looking forward to playing that again. 10:30, we're going to talk to Carter Hawkins, the general manager for the Chicago Cubs, who might have been in the same kind of mood as Craig Counsell last night, Bruce. But before we get to Craig Counsell, how would you describe and set up this audio we're about to hear? Because you made this observation when I came in. It's only game four, but Craig Counsell sounds like he's already had enough.
He's in mid-season form as far as grumpiness goes, and I like it. I like it's like game one. It could be game 70. It could be game 135. That's how serious this manager takes a loss, and in particular, a loss where a pitcher just really didn't have his stuff.
Tonight, especially at bat against Suarez.
Well, those were just, you know, middle pitches that a, you know, a good home run hitter did what he does really well. So those are mistakes, and he made us pay for them.
What was Kelly doing to kind of keep the lineup in check?
Yeah, just kind of normal what he does. You know, the kind of the hard changeups, a neutralizer. It's just down, and you see like the kind of the Michael Busch at bats maybe would kind of be indicative of that. Of you know, he just gets that ball down, and it's just a little off speed. See, it's not a swing and miss pitch; it's a ground ball pitch. But it, you know, it was a night we didn't. You know, we created one opportunity really tonight, and that's a tough way to win.
So what do you think of J-Mo's spring and kind of the things that he was working on to build off what he did last year?
Yeah, I mean, the spring is the spring. miss the season, and it's this is what counts. Tonight it wasn't. Tonight it wasn't good enough.
What'd you think of the bats? Seemed like, I want to say, like 60 or so pitches seen over the last six innings by your offense.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job.
Yeah, they did a good job, Craig. Hey, that wasn't full tilt, Counsel, but that was frustrated, Counsel. He sounded like a Cub fan felt watching them eke out all of one run.
It did. And you know, again, the last question was a media person asking about having patient at bats over the last 2 days after they just lost 8-1, right? So he didn't, you know, the inner answer was, WTF on this question. I mean, we got our brains beat out today, 8-1. Our starting pitcher wasn't any good. I don't want to talk about the good at-bats we had.
You
right?
Two, how would you evaluate Craig Council's ability to suffer fools? And I'm not saying those are foolish questions, but well, you know what I mean?
In the case of this fool?
And I'm not calling you a fool, but you know, it's just an expression.
No.
Is his patience level going to be in year two?
I mean, regardless of who you are, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether you consider me, you know, round like furniture for 40 years or a new person asking a question, he doesn't. He doesn't. You know, I mean, I don't think he goes out of his way to ever be rude. You know, he's a gentleman. But on the other hand, he's not giving you like Joe Madden type answers.
He's not sitting back and saying, let me tell you a story about my days in Double A.
No.
It reminds me of this. That was the beauty of Madden.
Tell you Gene Autry's stories. It's not going to happen.
And he could diffuse situations. Right. When you hear Craig Counsell like that after the third loss of the season sound frustrated like he needs a nap, I do wonder if this second year will be much different.
No. He's here to win every day. And being a competitor, look, it's overstatement on my point to say he really wants to win. Does he want to win more than Torey Lovullo on the other dugout? No, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But his attitude is, we just played a really crappy game, okay? We didn't have good at-bats against a good pitcher. Our pitcher was throwing meatballs down the middle of the plate to their number one home run hitter, okay? Just wasn't a good day. We're going to move by it, but he's just not going to suffer questions. That was 1 minute and 28 seconds before everybody was done with their questions and Craig was done with his answers.
773 texts in, says, isn't a good manager supposed to be more even-keeled, not too up or down, especially game three? Yes and no. Yes and no. I think nobody is going to question Craig Counsell's composure level or his ability to process these things. He may have a method to his madness. Mm-hmm. There might be something he wants to set a tone.
He didn't lose it there.
Right. He didn't lose
no,
it at
he
all.
Didn't lose
no.
It. No.
He's just being very demanding.
He's not giving you great copy if you're a writer or a broadcaster after the game. It's just like, you know, just, you know, the Jack Webb. If
matter
people
of fact.
Go way back,
yep.
You know, just... Just
the facts.
Just the facts, man.
Just the facts, ma'am. 312-644-6767. What did you hear, and how concerned are you, Cub fans? Or maybe you're a White Sox fan saying, ha, 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 they're in first place. The White Sox are. The Cubs are 1-3, and you're looking forward to today when Jonathan Cannon plays Jose Soriano on the mound. That's the matchup at the rate at 110. So maybe Sox fans feel good about their manager because, Bruce, as we kind of segue into this conversation about the Cubs and the Sox and beginning the season, I feel like the other day, opening day, the thing that stood out to me the most was just the presence and input and impact that Will Venable had on the outcome. This is a manager coming in with no experience. He managed the bullpen well. It was a clean game by the White Sox, and he had fun after the game being carted through the clubhouse and getting the beer shower and all those things. Will Venable era started in a way that the White Sox hoped for.
So he's not Tony La Russa. He's not Pedro Grifol, right?
That's two for two right there. You know, those are big, though.
Grady was an upgrade as far as acceptance by fans and media,
yes.
Right? And this might be, you know, the guy until if they're 2-8 or 2-9, that rhetoric might change. But there is a quiet confidence about Will Venable that's real, okay? And that's been there throughout the time he was a player, into his coaching, being the assistant manager in Texas with Bochy last year. There's a confident guy. There's a good baseball man there. Now, if the team is not good, you know, you won't be talking about that in 2 or 3 weeks.
No, you'll be talking about the same kinds of things that we talked about last year. Sloppy defense, inability to hit with runners in scoring position, and then a bullpen that's either nondescript or harmful to any lead they're trying to protect. But I think after spring training, which seemed productive, after one game, which you don't want to overreact to, the White Sox do seem to be in better hands.
Benintendi, Robert Vaughn. If those guys hit, they're going to win their share of games. Not a large amount. Not the lion's share, which is all. You know, they're going to win their share of games if they have good seasons offensively.
Okay? I'm intrigued by Vargas. He led off the other day. He had a very good spring. He was terrible at the end of last year. But if they have something in Miguel Vargas, I wonder what input he will have on this lineup, especially in the role they're putting him in, the catalyst.
Right. And again, I'm going to be watching Birmingham. I'm going to be watching AAA. I'm going to be watching Montgomery, the shortstop, eventually Montgomery, the center fielder, also Madroth at second base. I'm going to be watching the two left-handed pitchers that have Randy Johnson-type stuff, you know, coming through the minor leagues. So will I be more interested in their development than what's happening at 35th and Shields? At times, maybe.
Maybe so, but yeah. It's not insignificant what's going on at 35th and Shields, because we saw the other day Sean Burke was a surprise choice to start the opener. Opening day starter Sean Burke, that was not a descriptor I was expecting to use for a guy who was making, his fourth major league start on Thursday? And he comes through with 6 innings, shutout baseball, and his performance on his first start of 2025 was very reminiscent of Garrett Crochet's first performance of 2024. Now, quick background. The other night on the Chicago Lead, Chuck Garfine was our guest, and he said he made that comparison. And I scoffed. And I wrote down, Garrett Crochet? Did you just compare Sean Burke to Garrett Crochet? And yet, he performed that way. And last night, I said the same thing that I'm saying now on the television program on CHSN. And Chuck texts me and says, oh, that sounds familiar. But he's right. Burke was great. Crochet was great. I don't think he's going to be all-star Sean Burke, but I do think the Sox they have to feel like what they saw in him in the spring, they've got something to work with, and he could be dependable as a starter.
Well, he can. And
Chuck was right. See, I'm saying it. Chuck was right.
For one night, for sure he was right. I mean, I'm not going Garrett Crochet yet,
okay.
But I think, you know, from the credibility that he had from the end of last year in September, and again, evaluating anybody in September toward the end of the year and evaluating them in spring training is usually the no-nos in baseball. I think that all that's changed, David. I think that's changed. How many players have we heard about with the White Sox and even with the Cubs, guys like Workman, that can make teams with a good performance in spring training now, okay? I mean, Workman was Rule 5. He could have hit 200 in spring training, be easily returned to Detroit, you know, as a Rule 5 guy. Instead, he's going to be on that team all year, barring injury.
So he's actually going to play? It's not just a rumor he's going to play?
Well, I'm just as impatient as you are.
Right now, it's just sort of like a suggestion. You want? Come on, Craig. We're getting in bad moods waiting to see Gage Workman do
it. Where do you want him to play?
I think right now, maybe give Matt Shaw a night off.
Okay.
Maybe Saya got a hit last night, but I think when he started 1-for-14, I was thinking that might be a good spot for him somewhere.
Yeah. I agree, and I don't think he's going to let the young guy rot on the bench. I don't think that's going to happen. But again, you have to give Shaw some time to be confident out there too, right?
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to that start either, because he is valuable in many different ways, but I would like to see what Gage Workman has to offer.
You know, the thing in baseball now that we have very little patience for, I believe, is allowing young guys to develop, okay? We want instant gratification, right? In the NBA, in the NFL, guys come out there, they're performing right away, okay? 100%. In baseball, it's like, yeah, you know, we got to wait for him to go 1-for-22, make 5 errors, and, you know, and it's just like, it's such an alien thing from the other sports, and you, I think not only fans, but I think front offices and coaching staffs, they don't have as much patience for development on the field anymore. Unless you're, if you're sitting in Pittsburgh or you're sitting in Colorado right now, you know, you're not expected to win. With a team like the Cubs, you know, there's very little ground for the morale.
You're exactly right. Yeah. That's a good observation. It's also difficult to enter a season that's framed as playoffs or bust, and then after four games, talk about the patience required for the guy like Matt Shaw. They seem to be incompatible, Bruce, but I understand that it's necessary. You don't want to overreact because of the Cubs' 1-3 start. They go for a victory tonight back in Phoenix against the Diamondbacks, continuing that series. Pregame coverage, 6:35, first pitch, 7:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Meanwhile, Bulls fans, they host the Mavs tonight. The United Center coverage begins at 6:45 on News Radio WBBM 780.
One question I have for you. Betting and gambling on baseball is so much more prevalent now. It's legal. Everybody does it. Do you think that that has something to do with the patience level for the fan now?
I just want to say the word I would change is not necessarily patience level, but reaction to the reaction. The reaction to some of these games is intensified or amplified because I do think the prevalence of sports gambling. Yeah. So people who had money on Jameson Taillon last night are reacting in a way, maybe not because they're worried about Jameson Taillon lasting or not being the pitcher he should be this year to lead the Cubs to the division title. They're upset because they had him going deeper, or they bet on certain props that they thought he could have paid on.
When I started my career, there were two hosts that I worked with that gambled all the time, right? And they would bring their losses onto the air and talk about coaches who were horrible and coaches who should get fired, okay? To the point where it was just, it was so obvious, but again, they were both outstanding at what they did, so they made compelling arguments for why these guys should be fired, but in essence, they were losing a bundle betting on sports.
It's a fair point.
They went
and question.
Went to work.
Before we break, I want to ask you this big picture question, not necessarily about the gambling or anything about last night specifically, but when you see Justin Steele not as sharp in two starts as maybe you had hoped him to start the season, when you see Taillon get rocked like he did last night, Shota Umenaga's on the mound tonight. He's going to hopefully be sharp and better than he was in Japan, even though he had control issues there. Where is your level of concern about the starting pitching on this Cubs team?
I have some. I do. And it's not based necessarily on the Japan trip, the wonkiness of coming back, getting your legs back under you, getting enough work in. It's also based on the fact that outside of Ben Brown, you have a staff that's 92 to 93 miles an hour. So if they don't have command of their cutter, their breaking stuff that night, they're going to get clobbered, okay? Now, some of these guys like Steele and like Imanaga are really good at what they do. Last year, you know, Jameson Taillon had a really good year. The ballpark at Wrigley Field helped each and every one of them a lot because it played so big.
Well, you cannot make a mistake against A. Eugenio Suarez because he will make you pay, and Pat Hughes will sound like he loves every minute of it because he pronounces that name spectacularly. All right, we're just getting started here on Inside the Clubhouse. We've got, when we come back, Brian Bannister, the White Sox director of pitching, going to join us at 10:30. Carter Hawkins, the Cubs general manager, will be here on The Score. Stay right here, 9 to 11, Inside the Clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning between 9 and 11. Keep it right here on 670 The Score.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got essentially a pitching department that is established now, and so it gives us more confidence to bring in players and challenge them. Now, one of the benefits now compared to maybe where we were a year ago is we've been able to accumulate more depth throughout the organization, and We know it takes more than just 13 arms to navigate a season.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, David Hoff, Bruce Levine, here until 11 o'clock, talking baseball with you. That was the voice of White Sox general manager Chris Guest talking about the organizational approach to pitching and so many young prospects in the organization under whose responsibilities our next guest. That is now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is the White Sox director of pitching, Brian Bannister. Download the Circa app today. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Appreciate your time this morning. Let's start with opening day starter Sean Burke. He was outstanding. He was, when announced, a little bit of a surprise that he was going to be the guy. Why was he the guy, in your view, and how happy were you with the result?
You know, a lot of decisions go into who is the guy. Last year, Garrett Crochet was probably a surprise to most people, but you know, I give credit to Chris Getz. He believed in him. Garrett put in the work in the offseason and came out and had a great opening day and turned that into a great season. And, you know, with our young rotation, with the exception of Martin Perez, it could have been any one of them. But I think when we were lining things up based on spring training calendars and where guys were, it made sense to put him out. And he had a great finish the last year, and he kept the momentum going and on opening day.
Brian, thanks for joining us. You know, I'm going to jump right to it because it's the intriguing question that every director of pitching, general manager, pitching coach has to go through, and that is the depth of a pitching staff. And as you walk on eggshells to begin a season, not knowing exactly where the depth is going to take you, how often injury or a lack of performance is going to impact you, how much do you guys have to be on the waiver wire right now every single day watching for people who can help you, not necessarily just to be really good pitchers, but to have enough depth to get through a major league season?
You know, my previous rule of thumb was you want to have about 10 to 12 starters in a season that can contribute and you feel confident in, you know, to some extent, whether it's a spot start, whether it's a multi-game stretch. But I think nowadays with what we've seen, you know, you saw Detroit do it last year. The floor for the average pitcher or reliever has been raised with the quality of what they bring to the table every day. And the amount of innings that starters are throwing is going down. So you're getting to a lot of these hybrid situations where a good starter might only throw 140 to 160 innings. And you're having multi-inning reliever swingman types. And so you're able to piece together a season a little more creatively than you used to. And I think pitchers who were starters in the lower minor leagues are able to take on this 1-3 inning role. And I think you just have to get creative with how you assemble a staff, how you build in that depth. We're going to lose people like Thorpe and Adams, which we were counting on. But that's just par for the course nowadays in this game. And you have to really be able to develop pitchers faster and have creative ways to implement them so that Will has people to go to that he can trust.
Talking with White Sox director of pitching, Brian Bannister, here on The Score. So along those lines, Brian, got to wonder, you worry about the depth, and it has been compromised this spring because of the rash of injuries. Six pitchers in the White Sox organization facing Tommy John surgery, which I think, is it a sign of the times, or is it something that is just a rash of bad luck? I'm not sure what it is, but I wonder, what are the questions you're asking internally to find out why this might have been happening or how to prevent it moving forward?
Yeah, we audit everything. You know, this was my personal worst spring that I've had in the decade long I've been a coach. And, you know, inevitably the ambulance chasers come out on social media and start looking at mechanics and explain why it happened. You know, LinkedIn, you start getting emails all the time. And it is what it is. It's kind of par for the course because to win in this game right now, you have to push performance. You have to have pitchers that can get these hitters out who are up there not chasing batting average anymore but trying to do damage on every swing. And it's just the nature of how the game's evolved. And so we have to have pitchers with good enough stuff to miss bats. But you know there is the elevated risk. It's kind of like redlining the engine on your car. It's probably going to break down a little bit quicker. And so you have to do more preparation on the strength and conditioning side. We have the guys in the lab working on their mechanics, but inevitably they have to be able to throw pitches that win ball games, and we have to get to that point. So over 40% of the pitchers in the big leagues have had Tommy John surgery, and I hate that stat, but that's where we're at. And so we have to continually develop pitchers and just say, hey, if you have surgery, it's not the end of the world. Many pitchers come back and have great, great careers after surgery. You know, Dylan Cease, Garrett Crochet. You look around the league, I was looking at opening day starters all around the league. Many of them I've had personally, the Nate Evaldis, the Zach Wheelers. They've all had injuries, and so it's not the end of the world, and you just have to keep moving on and keep them motivated and go out and throw your best stuff every single day.
Talking to the Angels, Perry Minasian, their general manager, we talked about the White Sox, and we talked about what he's tried to do over there since 2021, and that is develop pitchers who don't necessarily blow at 98, and if they do, bringing that down to a point where they can be taught how to pitch first before they blow their arms out. That's a pretty much state-of-the-art stuff for baseball, and I'm sensing that you and the White Sox are going to be trying to do the exact same thing, that you have the opportunity here to develop pitchers rather than push forward on guys that throw 98, draft guys that throw only 98, push them in and see them blow out in 2.5 years.
Yeah, and I'm one, you know, my dad pitched in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I'm as old school as I come with what I love about the art of pitching and what I want to see pitchers go out and do with great command, great mechanics, the aesthetics of pitching deep into games. I love all of that about baseball. But at the same time, we have to win. And if we don't win, that's the bottom line. We're not a good baseball team, and frankly, most of us won't be in our jobs. And so you're balancing what the game requires in its current form with what I love most about the game, and I'm always trying to strike that balance. And what I've seen over the last decade is I've had pitchers who have blown out throwing close to 100 miles an hour, and I've had pitchers blow out throwing 91 miles an hour. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. Sometimes there were things that happened structurally in their arms before we acquired them, or as they were developing through travel ball in high school and college and everything else they've done. And right. So you just have to deal with the rash of injuries and be as smart about it, make sure their rehab protocols are in place, but really just keep building up that depth. And the number one thing in pitching development nowadays is efficiency. You have to personalize everything to the pitcher. You have to develop these guys as fast as possible, because if you do sustain a rash of injuries, you have to have the next wave right on the doorstep ready to come up and contribute.
All right, Brian, so let's go from big picture to zooming in on this rotation. In the spring, I feel like we had two guys who were surprises for different reasons. Shane Smith won a spot in the rotation, the Rule 5 right-hander who's going to be part of the Sox rotation. It was a great storyline, and he certainly earned that role. Likewise, and maybe in a different way, Jonathan Cannon did not have the spring that maybe he envisioned, and yet he's pitching today, he's part of that rotation, and he does have a bright future based on what we saw last year. How would you assess those two guys in terms of where they are in their development and what the expectations are realistically?
Smith is a great story. He's a big physical guy, electric fastball, undrafted, not protected in the Rule 5 by the Brewers. So just a great kind of Cinderella story on how he got here. And he definitely came out both throwing harder and with a new changeup as a weapon that, for me, you know, I watched his first bullpen and I walked over to Chris Getz and I said, this guy I can start. And we were just hoping with any Rule 5 pick that you get a legitimate reliever out of it to try to get him through that first year and satisfy the innings requirement and service time requirements for a Rule 5 pick. But he came in, exceeded expectations. He's a great guy, puts in a ton of work, says the right things. He's kind of a model citizen out there. And I think it's going to be easy for everyone to root for him, and especially with his backstory. And then Jonathan Cannon, you know, one of the things we've seen, Phoenix has sneaky high elevation. It has different humidity. We've seen it with some sinker ballers, especially. He had to pitch against the Giants twice in spring training, who had the best record. And sometimes you just get a bad luck of the draw. The conditions aren't right. The ball is jumping, the wind. You get all kinds of conditions in spring training. So the hits were elevated. He didn't have the spring he wanted, but he kept putting in the work. He's a great guy. I'm excited for him again. And we've been making adjustments behind the scene. And he already saw when we got back to Chicago here and threw his first pen, his changeup was moving more, his sinker was sinking more, and it felt – the ball felt better in his hands just because of the different weather conditions.
All right, so we're holding you to six shutout innings today for Jonathan Cannon. And that's Brian Bannister, ladies and gentlemen. Seriously, all that really makes a lot of sense. And we've always heard that about Arizona as well, Brian. The great story that I was telling David and Mike Mulligan here on Friday was about Cam Boozer. Can you talk a little bit about this guy's career and how he got to you? And we only have another couple minutes with
but
you.
Can you tell me who has rights to the screenplay?
Yeah. You know, another great story. You know, I love left-handed pitchers. You know, pitchers that have started to almost have a renaissance or a comeback or almost written the first chapter of their book later in their career. I had Rich Hill in Boston, and that was one of my favorite stories. You know, to see somebody heading towards their mid-30s that are kind of like hitting their stride for the first time and really having the most success they've ever had, really easy to root for. He puts his work in every day. You know, we've gotten into some of the things that we can optimize about his game, you know, managing the damage on his cutter versus lefties last year, making sure, you know, he doesn't twist too much in his mechanics so he gets the ball to the spot he wants and he doesn't leave it over the plate. He's made all those adjustments and, you know, just continuing to get better. But he was a very productive pitcher. Anytime you have a lefty throwing mid to high 90s, it's a nice resource to have. And he's just fun. He asks you good questions. He's really invested in his own development. And looking forward to see what he does for us for the next couple of years.
He was a carpenter for 3 years, okay, in between being a baseball player, right? I mean, you can't write this stuff up with, you know, arm injury that had him shelved, car injury that had him shelved, a little indiscretion that had him shelved. And then he's back at age almost 33, you know, striking out three guys in the other inning the other night. It's one of those great baseball stories right now.
My dad always talked about that some of the better baseball players are some of the guys that reinvent their careers. It happens because of what they do off the field. My dad was a car mechanic. My grandfather worked on airplanes. And, you know, you see Hall of Famers like a Robin Yount ride motorcycles. There's oftentimes a hobby or a skill behind the scenes that leads to exceptional finger, forearm, wrist strength. And it ends up translating into being a better pitcher or a better baseball player. And so I love stories where sometimes what they're doing off the field ends up helping their performance on the field.
What's yours? What's your hobby?
I should have had a better one because I didn't go hard enough. My hobby is helping pitchers get better.
keep up the great work, then, yeah. Because you have a lot to be happy and encouraged about in the White Sox organization. Brian Bannister, thanks for your time this morning.
Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
White Sox Director of Pitching, Brian Bannister, talking about the White Sox. Thought, Bruce, he was very direct and candid about the issues that they confront with the rash of Tommy John surgeries. Also realistic about what to expect from the young pitchers moving forward.
I you know, hearing him talk, David, I get the sense of a front office executive that they're worried about their jobs if they don't promote pitchers through, even though they don't always feel like this is the proper way to go. And it's like he was so honest about the reality of, hey, if we don't develop these guys, you know, Chris Getz, myself, and the other guys, we're going to be out on our butt.
You won't be there to worry about what happens
next.
Right,
and that's why what Manassian's doing with the Angels, and those pitchers are starting to come around in that organization right now. it's like going out on a pirate's plank. You know, you are just risking your career to do what you feel is the right thing for the organization.
He was a very candid. We'll talk about the White Sox moving forward, what they're doing today, and what happened last night in AAA, which might bear keeping in mind because, as Bruce said, White Sox fans are going to keep their eyes on the minors this year because that development affects what goes on at the major league level. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haw, here until 11, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, David Haw here until 11. Bruce, last night, The Sox didn't play, but there was still something interesting happening to the White Sox this season. Colson Montgomery, the would-be opening day shortstop who wasn't, that's a long phrase, homered for the Charlotte Knights. Colson Montgomery went deep. Now, the other things happened in that game. The Charlotte Knights got off to a great start. They won 9-1. Kyle Teal had a single to right. He drove in a run. Chase Mydroth was on base. All those things. But Colson Montgomery homering is significant because you want him to get off to a good start. So he's in Chicago by June 1st.
Right. And you know, again, when I was on with you guys during the week, I said I'm going to want to watch a lot of Charlotte and a lot of Birmingham this year as far as development for the White Sox, because the real hope for the Chicago White Sox future, position player wise, pitching wise, they're not necessarily on that 26-man roster.
Right.
You know,
it's a good
point. Some of them are.
Many of them are, maybe most of them.
Right.
Broader conversation, both sides of town facing the same conundrum when it comes to prospects. When is the right time to promote somebody and give them a major league opportunity? We're seeing with the Cubs, people are going to start to question whether Matt Shaw was rushed, whether the Cubs picked the right prospect to start at third base.
Cam Smith.
Well, Cam Smith is starting for the Astros in right field. I don't think the Cubs would have promoted Cam Smith, a guy who was just drafted last year. So I think that Matt Shaw or Cam Smith is an interesting either or, but I don't think it's realistic because the Cubs never would have rushed him like that.
David, the old rule of thumb was you must dominate in the minor leagues to be able to come up to Major League Baseball. I think that theory is by the boards now.
That's interesting because it changes the draft too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, I mean, you're competing. You're able to stay above water. Now we can do the rest of your development at the major league level, okay? And you're going to and again, what are the expectations for a hitter? What's the normal batting average for a hitter anymore in that passe statistic? It's probably around 242, something like that. That's the average. It's like
well, if the bar is lower, then help me understand this. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. But if the bar
that's
is lower,
different in itself.
Why did the White Sox send both Colson Montgomery and Chase Mydroth to AAA when both were given the chance to earn the starting shortstop job and did not seize that opportunity? If the bar has lowered, why wouldn't they just say, okay, kid, go out there, start for us. We're going to invest in hope and believe that you can do the job up here.
Take the pressure off, build them up as players. Make them dominate. Make them be really good somewhere. Then come up. You know, Montgomery hit like 210 last year in the minor leagues, right? So even though batting average doesn't count for most people anymore, that's not enough content.
But the Sox wanted us to believe the Arizona Fall League was enough, that he showed enough promise there to kind of make last season negligible.
I think that it shows these executives with the White Sox really know what they're doing, okay? Because they're not forcing the issue on players that they think, from what they say in their meetings, in their skull sessions when they get together, you know, he just doesn't seem ready for the major leagues, okay? There's some fine-tuning things that they have to get done, and they're going to do it at AAA. We're not going to win 100 games this year. We're not winning 90 games. Let's give them their time. They can come up the end of April, the beginning of May, the middle of May, the beginning of June. Any timetable for these players when they're ready to help this team win and stay in the major leagues is probably a good idea.
That's what Bruce thinks. What do you think? 312-644-6767. Call or text. Let us know what you think about the White Sox plan for developing their prospects or the Cubs. Did they rush Matt Shaw? What are they going to do if he doesn't start out hot at the plate or in the field? It's Inside the Clubhouse. When we come back, time for a little chin music here on 670 The Score.